We got that recorded.
Hello, we're here to welcome everyone to the Community Development Advisory Committee. The first order of business is call to order. I'd like to start there. Name your name and your district that you represent.
Alita Faustes, Barrel District.
Leslie Mealy, Yucca District.
Theodora Hackenberg, Barrel District.
Dorisa Dvorak, Ocotillo District.
Lisa Baker, Barrel District.
David Giles, Shaharu District.
Vivian Zarga, Ocotillo District.
And
on the phone,
Marcia.
Marcia Newman, Cactus District.
Awesome, thanks. And now we have a citizen's comment. If there's any citizens that would like to speak, now's the time to do it. I don't see any citizens. The approval of the minutes. Has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes from last month's meeting? Review them, any addendums, changes? Do I have an order then to motion to approve the minutes?
I move that we approve the minutes.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
They've been motion and set to approve the minutes and second. Old business, quorum requirement. Who's going to be speaking about this?
That would be me.
Okay, awesome.
Pursuant to our meeting from last month, there was a question about what constitutes quorum, if it's those members who are seated or those members in the committee in its entirety. And so the city attorney did some research and came up with the exact language here. That basically our quorum is established by the total number of seats on the committee and not the number of seats that are occupied. So we need to have 8 members at all times. And the specific verbiage that he provided is here. Like to see that. And that is reflected in our bylaws. So we are compliant when we have them.
Good to know. And that becomes very important when we have our presentations and then decide those too as well. So. Okay, thank you. Next up is new business. Update on recent developments in the community housing division. And
Mr. Donald Paradise will be presenting that.
Awesome.
Good evening. How are you?
Love.
It's nice to see you all again. It's been a couple of months since I've seen you, and there's some new faces. So it's good to see you all. You have a packet already. We're just going to go quickly over that. This community services, it looks like this. You got that one?
Okay.
Everything is pretty much the same, but we'll go over a few highlights. Of course, we have 1,054 vouchers and we have 155 public housing units. We're designed to serve the low to moderate income. As far as rent collection, you can see that there we're collecting a little bit more than what we're supposed to be collecting, so that's really good. And that the reason why it's slightly more than what we're supposed to be collecting is because people maybe are on repayment agreements or things like that where they didn't pay us in the past, and so they're paying us now, which is always a good thing. As far as public housing occupancy by site, overall we're at 97.2 as of when this was written. However, since then we are over 98%. We only have 2 vacant units, which makes it nearly 99% right now, so which is really good. I'm really pleased with the staff that they can keep the units that occupied. But we also know that there's a great need in our community, so you know that shouldn't be a problem anyway. And so that's good. If you notice there underneath that, the last sentence there talks about the opening of the waiting list for the public housing program on October 22nd and 24th. We chose to limit it to 2 days because the number of telephone calls or the number of applications that we might receive. We did get a letter from the Institute for Justice, and basically they reviewed our notice to the public, and they were asking us to cease and desist, which means to stop and don't take any more applications. The problem is they didn't send us that until after the waiting list was already open. It had been advertised for 2 weeks already, and so Me and my staff, we did a review of the claims that this institute was making, and most of them, 99% of them, are completely erroneous, really. We're in compliance in everything that we're supposed to do. And so I kicked that up to my supervisor, which is Ms. Small. She talked to the city attorney as well as the city manager and assistant city managers. They decided, since we are in compliance with our own regulations, our own administrative plan, and our own ACOP, that we're going to go ahead and continue to take the applications. Not that we won't take some of their advice. They were giving us some, they were naming some points that they felt that we were out of compliance with, and they were trying to give some advice as to how to correct that. We're going to take some of that advice. However, we're going to do it after this waiting list is open, and the reason is because we've already started. We've already opened the Section 8 waiting list, and we didn't receive that until 4 hours into it, so we didn't want to stop the process or anything like that. And so we're going to, I tried to change the paper for the public housing open waiting list, which is going to be next week, and they said either you can print it or not print it, but you can't change the verbiage that's in there. So we just decided to go ahead and leave it the way it was, and the next time we open, we'll make some of the changes they recommended. They were just recommendations. They're not anything to be concerned about. Talk to the city manager, I'm sorry, the city attorney about them. Some of the information that they were claiming that we were in a violation of, they were taking out of context. I don't know if you, how many of you read the Bible or certain things. You can make a verse say anything in the Bible based on a subject, but if you read it in context, it has a whole different meaning, and that's what they did. They were talking about the waiting list, and they were quoting from chapter 1, which the waiting list addressed in chapter 4. And so that's talking about a whole different area. That's equal opportunity for everybody. The waiting list and how we're going to administer the waiting list and reach out to the public is defined in chapter 4. And so I mentioned all of that in my response to the Institute for Justice, and that's why we just decided to go ahead and continue to do what we were doing. I just wanted to let you know that in case you heard that out and about, that we did get a letter from the Institute of Justice. It was a 22-page letter. The same day that we received ours, the city of Chandler had notified the public that they were going to be opening their waiting list, and they received the same exact notice that we received. And then also, the city of Phoenix was challenged. I believe Mesa was challenged. So anybody who's opening their waiting list for whatever reason, the local agencies around here are challenging them. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know, in case you were to hear something about it, that there was some concerns, but we addressed them all. Work orders there, I'm not really going to go into work orders. There's nothing outstanding there, anything that should be concerned about. The Section 8 budget for the HAP expenses, we're spending all the money that we're supposed to be spending, including the FSS escrow account. I was mentioning to some of the people that were here a little bit earlier that we and my staff are going after additional grants to serve additional populations that may or may not be being served currently. What I mean by that is we apply for a ROSC grant, which is the Resident Opportunities for Self-Sufficiency. It's much like the FSS program for Section 8, but it's for the public housing residents. And so we applied for that. I applied for that earlier this week. And then we also applied for a TBRA with the city of Glendale. And so I'll be coming before you in a presentation for the TBRA. Basically, that's a grant for a two-year voucher only. It has a two-year limit on it, but basically it's trying to take those who are either homeless or couch surfing, or individuals who are at risk of becoming homeless, giving them a voucher, helping them, getting them some supportive services, trying to make them either within the 2 years, either self-sufficient to be on their own and be able to maintain their own home, or to have them apply for and try to get a voucher or public housing or something more permanent so that they can continue their path to self-sufficiency and not homeless anymore. And so those are a couple of grants. We're going after another, as we were talking about earlier. That's the, it's called the, I call it FUPPY. It's a Family Unification Program, Youth Aging Out of Foster Care. Okay, so it's those individuals that are minors now, but when they turn 18, the state no longer has governance over them. So they're released from the foster care system, but now they have nowhere to go. It's a huge problem in all cities throughout the United States. The government recognizes that. They do have currently an open NOFA, what's a notice of available funding to serve those families. So we're applying for 25 vouchers to try to serve at least 25 individuals on that. So right now there's not an end date, and I don't have a date, a projected date yet when we're going to apply, but it should be within the next week or two. But I just started that process today. Then after that, we're going to go for some of the family unification. It's going to be opening later this year for family unification. That's where a mother, for some reason, has her children taken from her, or parents have their children taken from them. And a barrier to bringing the family back together is that the state recognized they don't have a house big enough for them. So we give them a voucher after a referral comes from the Department of Children and Families, or whatever y'all call it here. What is it called? DHS?
DES?
DES? Okay, so we get a referral from them. We issue the family a voucher. They go out and find a unit. Then when the family's maintaining that unit, the children are put back with the family. That's why they call it family unification. So we're going to be going after 25 of those vouchers as well. And so there's a lot of activity going regarding trying to get new vouchers, and so that we can continue to serve more people in our community. All right, and then we have voucher lease-up rates. You see there we have 1,054 allocated. And our lease-up rate right now is 94.59%. However, we did absorb some additional families, so that has went up. But more importantly, we're spending over 101% of the money that HUD gives us. The reason why we can spend over that amount, and I mentioned this in the last time that we spoke, was that we have HUD held reserves. So anytime we spend more money, they give us some of the money that they were holding for us on our behalf. They have about $1 million of ours that we should have used previously, but we didn't because the lease-up rate was low. So they're just giving us back some of that money in small increments as we need it. And so that's a really good thing. The Housing Choice Voucher waiting list opened on October 8th and 10th. We got about 800 out of those 2 days. We got about 800 names that we're going to be sending out applications to. And so if we would have, the Institute of Justice, one of their claims was that we're not holding it open long enough. The problem is that HUD states in their regulations that a housing authority can open and close their waiting list so long as they have enough people on their list to fill the vacancies for the next 2 years. If we would have held it open, we projected out what we would have received in 21 days, would have been over 9,000 applications. And we certainly would not have been able to serve 9,000 applications, not any time in the near future. So that's why we chose to close it after 2 days, so that those families that get on the waiting list, they have a realistic chance within the next few years that they'll be being called to come in to see if they qualify for a voucher. Okay, you see the monthly bank balances there, nothing outstanding there, or nothing that really strikes. We got a CMAP report. The final item on that list is a CMAP preliminary report. However, this has now been changed. We were at 100%, but my predecessor apparently they were not using all of the funds that HUD gave them. They weren't using the vouchers. They weren't even close to it. And so for some reason, and I really don't know what the reason was, they neglected that area. And so what happened was one of the indicators is stating that your lease-up rate, that you're utilizing either all of the vouchers that we give you that HUD gives us, or we're using all of the money. One of those two indicators has to be over 98%, which we are now. However, that was not the case last year, about a year and a half ago from now. That was not the case. And so, unfortunately, HUD, the way that we get our CMAP score is unusual because the HUD works on a physical year and our year is June to July, right? July to June, into June. However, HUD's budget year is from January to December. Early January 2018, the first 6 months, they were way off, they were way underutilized. Unfortunately, they didn't catch up enough in the last few months of the year in order to offset that balance. So we didn't, all that to say, we didn't get any points as far as utilization. That dropped our score by 14 points. And so we're at 86, we're considered standard instead of high performing. But I did speak to the field office representative, who is Ms. Nicole Green, and she stated in my conversations when she notified me that we didn't qualify for the as high performer, she did say, I have to write a corrective action on how we're going to address this issue so that it's no longer a problem in the future, which I've done many times. But she said, all you want to do is just mention the fact that you're doing that now. I can see clearly that you're well over that amount, so you have no problems with that. So, any questions?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
With your mention of vouchers for the foster kids that are aging out of foster care, do these vouchers basically provide them with housing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And as a matter of fact, that's a referral system that comes directly from DES, just like the family unification. So there's no way for us to know who's going to be aging out of foster care in the relatively near future. So we're going to rely on them, let them know that we have these vouchers, and they'll start referring individuals to us, and we'll give them the vouchers so that they have a stopgap to where they're not homeless.
And what is the...
Generally, it's a two-year.
2 years.
It's
okay.
A two-year voucher. However, it can go longer.
Reapplication or?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I have a couple of questions. The cease and desist order. So that was for us to not open our waiting list. And why would they want us to not open our wait? I'm trying to figure out why they would want us to not open our waiting list.
Allegedly, they were claiming that we were discriminating because the limited time that we had the waiting list open, so all of the people who wanted to apply wouldn't have the opportunity to. That was one of the things. There was eight different things that they were claiming, seven of them which they stated were illegal.
Okay, so they wanted us to not open the waiting list.
That's
because
correct.
we were already processing.
We were already receiving.
Oh yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
And I understand that we need to do that, but
yeah.
I was just trying to understand why they would want us to not. So they're wanting us to not do it because
That's
they were
correct.
Saying, well, we weren't following procedures, so don't do anything until
That's
you
correct.
Fix this. Okay.
That's correct.
I was just trying, thank you. I was just trying to wrap my head around that. Also, I have a question about the work orders.
Sure.
So we went, so I did 100, there's 100 less work orders from August to September, and yet we still have 24 remaining. So it went from 90% to 79%. Is it the time of reporting? Are we waiting for
the
parts?
The time of reporting, and this is why we had we have three, four in our maintenance. One is a maintenance supervisor. The three that were left, one of them went on vacation for a while. Another one, he had medical leave, and he was out for 6 weeks with surgery.
Okay.
And so, you know, one gentleman, basically what it came down to is we didn't close all of the things properly. It's not that they weren't done, they just weren't closed in the system. So we went back and addressed it.
Okay, I have a background in property management and hospitality and having maintenance departments. So it's like, okay, is this staffing, is this parts, is this,
yeah.
You know, because again, that's still a significant drop in, you know, ones that are coming in and yet are not
yes,
finished.
Ma'am. Yes, we did recognize that when we saw the numbers. So we went and asked that, the person who opens the waiting list, the work order has to be the one that also closes it because they were out. They didn't They didn't have the opportunity to close it.
Gotcha. Got every maintenance individual is responsible for closing out their own.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I just add something to that? Sort of coincidentally, and I don't think we've gone into detail about this, but I spoke with our maintenance supervisor. If you recall from this funding round from 1920, the Revitalization Division got funding set aside for a youth employment program. And the original intention was to partner with the Water Services Department. They have a great need for operators, and there's not really a lot of people coming into that and that sort of line of work. And fortunately, that kind of fell through. They decided to go with WestMac. So we discussed it with Donald, the staff, to retool it so that we have some additional maintenance staff. So I believe it was Frank said he could use one or two on a part-time basis. So sort of coincidentally, that would address this issue. So really the point of it is it's a youth employment. So there's some sort of job training and we would be able to pay them. And so rather than having a water services focus, we would have a maintenance or housing focus.
That's fantastic. So I'm sure they could use that.
HUD calls that youth build. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really prepared to talk about that one. Sorry. Now, but I can. No, it's fine. So yes, we'll be writing a grant for the youth build program. The thing about the youth build program is taking at-risk youth anywhere from the age of 16 to 24, low income obviously, and teaching them maintenance skills. And so we'll need to add some maintenance staff in order to teach them. And it's going to be, they're going to learn all types of different disciplines. But the whole idea is to get them ready to where now they have some basic skills and understandings to where now they can go out and get an apprenticeship maybe at a construction company, a plumbing company, an electric company, or something like that. And so it's worked very well. Different housing authorities that I've worked for have had it for many years. Some call it the Youth Build Program, which is what HUD calls it. Other ones call it the Sweet Pea Program. It's just whatever you want to name it. It all works the same. It's designed to teach them life skills so that they can go out and become employable. And hopefully, they'll not need the services of the Community Services Department any longer. Yes.
Can I get a definition as to what lease up means?
Lease up means that we have a voucher here that's available. HUD says we have 1,055 vouchers that we're giving you the money to service. However, the 1,055 vouchers, we're giving you, let's just say approximate numbers, $8 million to serve those with. That's your yearly budget, $8 million. Because we can't fill all 1,055, if we issued 1,055 vouchers, we would be spending more than $8 million. We'd be spending maybe $9 million. We just don't have that money. HUD won't give us any more except for what we already have in the HUD-held reserves. There's no new money for vouchers to add additional vouchers. That's why we're going out for different grants and things like that. We can add vouchers, but they're targeted for specific populations.
Why is it called lease up?
It's lease up because we're leasing somebody. So once they sign a lease, that's the lease, and you're leasing up. That's just, or
what's
a better name, a better name for it is utilization, your utilization rate. You're utilizing the funds or the vouchers that HUD gives you.
Think of it, you're trying to fill up the apartments. You're trying to fill up the houses. That's what we always call the lease up.
If you're familiar with property management.
All of the money.
Yeah.
So yes.
Because you can't really determine how much each apartment or house is going to cost. You're either going to spend all your money or use all your vouchers, but they'll never be equal. Does that make sense?
And the problem is with our current economy, the way that things are going, which is booming, which is great. Everybody loves it, except that we can serve less people with that because the rates for rent now start increasing. Mm-hmm. So it costs more to house the same 1,000 families that we were serving before because landlords are saying, hey, my house is now worth more, or my unit is now worth more. I want a rent increase of $50, $75, $100, whatever it might be. And so we have to grant that if it meets rent reasonableness. So therefore, there's less money in this $8 million pot to serve more families with. Any additional questions?
Well, thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
If you don't mind, I'm going to excuse myself because the city allowed all of its employees to have tickets to the hockey game. And so that's tonight.
Well, good luck and may they win.
So I'm going to try to get into the hockey game.
Yes. So, let's hope they win.
Time.
Enjoy. Thank you. Next up is the...
Does she have a question?
Oh, did
this way.
She's making...
Oh, no, I don't think she is. The Community Action Program Quarterly Update. Is Shema up to it?
Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for this wonderful task you all do in volunteering. If you don't mind, I'm going to sit a little bit more comfortable.
Because we're all sitting.
Stand up, make it a little bit more casual. Thank you very much for being here tonight. I wanted to cover four things, but in full disclosure, the last two, I wanted to talk about those first. Part of our annual reporting requires that we have some kind of documentation that you've all received, the latest copy of the bylaws, at least every 2 years, and you may have done that. Sometimes they ask for a signature that you've received it. Sometimes they just want it in the minutes. But to cover everything, we decided that we would just provide those, and we have some signature forms up here for that as well. I also wanted to cover one other thing, which was the conflict of interest. You received some training on that, I believe, last month. And even though it is in the minutes, that's one of the things they want a signature for. So we've got that, just basically acknowledging that you did, in fact, receive some guidance or somebody from our legal team, I believe, came in here and talked to you a little bit about that. So that I wanted to make sure I got that out of the way as we start. The other two things is every quarter, we'd like to talk about our expenditures for the quarter. We've got below here July through September. Those are our expenditure and our household numbers. We've got the LIHEAP right in the middle there. That one and the City of Glendale are the ones I want to concentrate on, but I want to just point out that the processed versus the households assisted means that sometimes a household might receive more than one LIHEAP payment, and I just wanted to be to explain that portion there as to why that language, in case you caught it, you may not have caught it, but the other ones are households, and that's the only one that's payments assisted, because we very well may have one person who received more than one payment of LIHEAP, depending on their situations. We've expended for LIHEAP $183,589. We're right on target to spend our $835,000 given to us by DES for that fund. I also wanted to tell you that last year we returned about $330,000 back to DES that we did not spend. And so they have just recently sent us over an alert saying that they're going to give us that all back. Mm. So that $835,000 is going to turn into about $1.1 million, which is great because you guys all know about the moratorium, which is ended a couple of days ago for APS. And we do expect to see a spike in need for people coming in. That have maybe taken advantage of the time that they were not being demanded to pay, and so we're expecting, with the assistance of our partner APS, that have given us some maps to kind of show us this area in particular, 85301. We could expect to have quite a few people that have very high bills. We're trying to. Let off some of the steam, if you will. Once a month, we along with our regular process of taking appointments, we allow for a first come first serve at our CAP office across the way here. We're doing that tomorrow. That's for this year. We for this month, and we expect to be very busy there. That helps the person who may not or forgot to call on a Monday morning, because if you forget on a Monday morning, then you got to wait till the next Monday. And so every once in a while, we'll do that, and I think that's going to be very timely. Especially in light of the moratorium having just ended. Just to give you an idea how things are picking up, for half for up to today, for just the month of October, we've spent almost $50,000. We're on target to spend $100,000 for this month in LIHEAP utility assistance funding, which is very high. I mean, if you multiply that by 12, there's our $1.2 million right there. But we do have the winter months coming up, so we know that we need to overspend a little bit now so that we can kind of balance things out. And as far as the city of Glendale, if you remember back when we talked about the beginning of the year, the fiscal year, the city of Glendale had agreed to give us $50,000 in municipal bill assistance, which covered water, but it also covered trash and sewer. And so we're right on track with that. If you look at that, one quarter of the way, we would expect $12,500, but it took a little while to get going. $6,708 of that was just last month. So I think that this is really starting to get some traction, and we would expect that's going to increase, and probably would end up spending that prior to the end of the fiscal year. And hopefully the city will see that, and we'll see. If they see that maybe they would maybe consider we have seen a significant need, they would consider potentially adding to that. We have 371 unduplicated households so far, and individuals 975. Both of those are on pace to surpass last year's totals. I wanted to talk also a little bit about our CAP plan that we talked about at the beginning of the fiscal year. A CAP plan is something that we look at and we say this is kind of falls into our most recent, not that recent, but most recent strategic plan, and these are some of the themes that came out of it. And some of the things that we wanted to try to do to improve our processes going forward this fiscal year, to be more efficient, to be more reactive towards the needs of our citizens. One of the things that we talked about was technology. We talked about reporting upgrades, and that really has to do with our database. That is still in process. We're working with our vendor, CAP60 vendor, and trying to get them to make some modifications that will allow us to do some reporting that we're currently doing manually, even though we have the database. There are certain things that we're still tallying manually, and we're trying to increase the efficiencies on that. That's an ongoing. The CAP lobby upgrades. One of the things that has always come out when we ask not just our staff but the clients is that a lot of times they come in and they need documents that they need printed. And we can't take them back and print from ours because it exposes their account numbers on our stuff. There's a lot of things, there's a lot of reasons for that. So one of the things that we're trying to do is to put a little kiosk, a little actual PC out there that we can remove at night, but they can actually go out there, log into their emails if they need to print something out, and it'll print behind the window. So that's something that we're working on. We just got a bid from our IT to go in there and put in those jacks, and it falls within our budget, so that's something that we're going to go forward with. We would expect that to be functioning early in the next calendar year in 2020, which will be great for our clients. A lot of times they have to leave it and they have to make another appointment to come back just because they can't print a document. The mobile eviction prevention capabilities. This has to do with our Arizona Department of Housing grant. They've given us some additional monies to buy laptops and some I guess they call them hotspots, or there's a couple other names for them, but basically so you can be mobile. And so most of the work that we're doing with eviction prevention is, all of it is being done in our office, but we want to be sensitive to the elderly who are out there and also experiencing possible evictions. If we can use that to go out to their homes and do the paperwork there, then that's what we're going to try to do there. We have some special events coming up. We have our Glendale Annual Health and Resource Fair, and that's on Saturday, November 23rd. I think that's going to be very timely because that also includes utility assistance there. We're toying with the idea of maybe opening up the utility assistance. That's over at the Civic Center, by the way, across the street over there. Maybe opening the utility part of it maybe an hour earlier than the actual fair for those people that might be a little bit desperate to get their utilities resolved. We haven't decided on that, but currently we have it set from 9 till noon. And then every year we have our CAP holiday event where we invite families in. Sometimes families are adopted, and we've already collected a lot of toys. The city of Glendale was generous enough to raffle off a bunch of tickets to the football game this past weekend. Just about everybody who entered won, and so there was a lot of toys, and so we've already started that process. But that's something that we could look forward to. It would be something that the CAP office does every year. And again, those are my updates for the CAP plan that we had talked about before. Some of the things that were identified as needs, and some of the things that we're doing and working towards during this fiscal year. Any questions or comments?
So with the moratorium that's being lifted, are those residents expected then to pay their bill in full on the first month, or are they prorating it out for them for a little bit?
They're automatically, if they have a bill over 300 and they have not contacted APS, they're automatically being placed on a 4-month payment plan.
Okay.
And if they need more, they have the option of calling in to APS and kind of making those arrangements. Initially, okay. That's what happens, which sounds great, but if you have a $1,000 bill and your regular bill is $200, that's $250 broken up into four on top of your regular bill, so that makes it a little difficult. Yeah. So we're trying to educate our clients as much as possible to make those phone calls. If you need 6 months, if you need 8 months, ask them. I think that they really do want to help. They just want the folks to reach out and say, this is what I can afford and this is what I cannot afford. We're trying to encourage them to not agree to a payment plan that they cannot afford, because if they miss that payment plan, our understanding is that they'll kind of go into a fast track to disconnect.
Right. So does APS or SRP then?
When I heard the story, can you hear me, folks?
Yes.
Yes.
When I heard the story on KJZZ a few days ago, and the reporter was giving the figures while I was driving, I did a little fast mental math, which there are probably a number of households that own like $1,000, and it's going to be rough for them, you know, to come up with that extra money. So that's good that we encourage them to, you know, don't say, oh, yes, I can do it, if you really can't.
So with that being said, the SRP and APS, they know who's behind. Are they contacting all of you as referrals? You said they had pinpointed the zip code here, but does the communication continue? How does that communication happen?
Well, SRP is not regulated by the Arizona Corporation Commission, so they were not part of the moratorium.
So it was just APS.
They have just gone as business as usual. But APS is taking a lot of steps to take some extra communication steps to put door hangers, to automatic dialers, even live person warm body dialers, to kind of let people know what their options are and those kinds of things.
Okay, so the other question I have is, how do they avoid this in the future? In other words, we know summer we have $300, $400 bills, and the winter they may have $50 bills. Will they be working with them to put on a budget billing program after that, so that those kinds of things are spread out and more evenly? You don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, it's just a question.
Yeah,
because
no.
I'm looking at it and going, gosh, every summer I'm going to get free money if I don't have to pay my bill until here, and then someone else covers me for the summer. I mean, there has to be another way to maybe manage that more effectively. Winterization is one of them. We do that, right? That's one of the things. But then how do they manage their money over the course of 12 months then as well? Because no one wants to be shut off at winter, summertime. I get that. And they shouldn't be.
One of the things that has changed as of October 1st, as far as our LIHEAP, DES has allowed us to instead of a $500 limit for a supplemental. A supplemental is somebody's already got LIHEAP, and then they come back sometime during that year and they have a disconnect, a threat of disconnect, or some other crisis that kicks in that supplemental. That's gone up from $500 to $800. So theoretically, if somebody gets $480 for their LIHEAP, they could come back. Or if they come back, if they come in with a $1,000 bill, we can use both whatever they qualify for plus the LIHEAP supplemental of $800. So that looks like about a $1,200, $1,300 assistance that we can help them with. So we're hoping that that extra $300 that they gave us might be able to help them. But it doesn't help somebody who's already used their supplemental.
Right.
APS does have a plan that's an equal.
Right. Oh, I'm on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So
they're all budget. There's all of the utilities have a budget billing available to people, and but then I know that, wow, you know, cause winter's coming. It's going to be really low. I can now afford Christmas presents, right? Because I'm paying less for electricity. So, you know, there's that balancing
and
act.
And it's not completely even across the year. They do adjust it every quarter. So, but I see your point.
Right.
If people are anticipating every year, they can come and get their summer bills taken care of,
right,
essentially.
Right.
What is the incentive for them to go to a budget billing where,
right,
they can actually make those payments?
Right, and that, I think that may be an ideal solution so that they're not stuck with those huge bills in the summer.
Well, that program just kind of puts them into the program so that every month you get,
right,
the same.
But it's optional. Budget billing is an optional program. You have to ask for it.
Yes.
Right, so
yeah,
not everyone wants to do that. When they go, I have to pay $130 in December, I only have really owe $50. Do you see? But they're building up their summer reserves to pay for that.
Right.
You know, that's the teaching part of how do we balance a budget, the financial planning. That's where it all comes into, is how do we plan financially to sustain ourselves as individuals as well. That's just a recommendation and something I'd like to see them do so that you don't have these high bills to be faced with.
I look at the elderly, that maybe that's not affordable for them either.
But they're on a fixed income. They get the same amount every month.
I know, but maybe their utilities are not affordable to them to begin with. Maybe they're in an older home and their summer bills are like sky high. And even if it was balanced out, it would be too much on a fixed income for them to pay. I mean, I see the struggle that people who are on a fixed income have during the summer, and even with, if they budget it out over the year, it's still too high for them to pay. So, I mean, I applaud APS for doing that, just so we don't have people dying in their homes during the summer. That's
yeah,
the saddest
the whole reason,
thing in
yes,
the world to me, is to have an elderly person pass away in their home because they couldn't afford their bill and it was shut off. I mean, I know there's people who milk the system and all that kind of stuff, but I try not to think about that and try to think about the people who are truly in need. And, you know, sometimes it's just too expensive. So.
Any other questions? Comments? Okay, thank you.
Did you want us to sign this paper?
I have, I can pass this around afterwards, if you like, after the adjourn. I just go to each one of you individually.
So I see all the bylaws are in here, included in here as well, right?
Yeah, they are.
Okay, because now we want to go look at those, or are you going to?
It's just an acknowledgement that they've been received.
Okay.
So we don't need to review them.
Okay. We have a staff update now of the Groom Zoom grant applications.
Yes.
Because Matt's in charge now.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Just wanted to provide you with a couple of updates because I know that some big things are going to be happening soon.
Yes.
The Revitalization Division. I find my own. Here we go. Zoom Grants was opened right before our last meeting, and it closed earlier this week. We did a preliminary review. We received 31 applications. This net number has increased from when this was written, which is actually substantially down. Typically, we get about 50, so we're not quite sure why that happened.
Mm.
So we're looking through, we're coding and sort of classifying what particular services organizations were asking money for. And we saw that there really wasn't a lot of representation from youth, disabled, or veterans. So there was some, but not I don't think there were any applications that had any veteran focus on them whatsoever. Youth was a little light and disabled was pretty light. Now granted, there is some overlap, but really a lot of it was more the focus on homeless, and some of the secondary focus was on youth, disabled, and food. We did not have any food related. We had a senior food program, but not a general food program. So what we did is we opted to just reopen it, and that went out Tuesday, or yesterday, actually. And so, are there any organizations that you're aware of that have not applied? They will have until through next Wednesday, up until midnight Thursday morning, to apply.
Is there an email that goes out to previous applicants?
Yes, Monica did send an email blast out to all of our current and former partners, any contact that we had by email over the last several years. So even if they're not current grant recipients, anyone who's ever been a subrecipient of ours did get an email. Okay.
Matt, have they received their money yet for this last grant thing? That's a problem.
I know.
Because I could sense some frustration in the audience when I was there that people were asking, you know, any idea when our money is coming in? Because they have to front those expenses to start their project, and they're like, okay. And that might be a reason why people are not applying.
That's a good point. It's possible. We still have not received our funding letter from HUD. And us and Maricopa County are the only two municipalities that we know of that have not, and we don't know why. What we did last week was send out a preliminary letter asking for scopes of work just to get the ball rolling and get that process going. Of course, predicated on the fact that we get our funding letter. Now, the chances of us not getting a funding award are extremely remote. So we're really not sure what's going on. I was on the phone today with the Home Consortium meeting, and yeah, as I found out, it's the county and us. We're the only ones who have not gotten our funding award. So technically, we cannot execute agreements or spend money. But just to keep the process rolling, or just to get it, you know, we've sent out all the documentation to all the subrecipients who were awarded, asking them if their scope's in, so that once we get that actual letter, the contracts are all set up, the scopes of work are, everything is done, and we can just go ahead and execute them. We are frustrated as well, so we get that. What I would like to do for next year is get those letters out as close to July 1st as possible to have the scopes and the contract development started earlier in the year, so that the moment we get our letter, whether it's in August or God willing it's in October again, that we can have the contracts executed as quickly as possible. It's an imperfect system. Certain things have to happen, and nothing happens in the order that you would like it to happen, and so unfortunately we have to make do with some of the timelines that are placed upon us. But we try to make it as efficient as possible, and we do acknowledge that that can be a challenge for a lot of our partners. But still, the contracts will stipulate that expenses will be reimbursed retroactive to July 1st, so if they can hold on to within that time period, so we'll certainly honor that, but we're not thrilled either internally with how the timelines work out.
Well, I'm anxious to see if opening it back up, if there's some more response.
There were a couple more that I noticed earlier today. I only went in once today, but there could be a few more.
Are there some in there that are uncompleted or incomplete, that maybe just they ran out of time or whatever, and or they decided not to do it, or
I don't think there were any incomplete applications. There might have been one or two that were incomplete and never, they had been started during the initial round. There are a couple new ones that were not there in the initial round, so that's generating some more interest. So we'll see how that turns out. And we are, you will be receiving your
book,
your application books at the next meeting in November. So we will have our staff review completed before then, and our combined staff review sheet on top of your books.
And what was that date again? Well, that was next Thursday is the cutoff? I'm sorry.
It would be Wednesday night
Wednesday,
slash Thursday.
So like Wednesday, 11:59 p.m.?
Yes.
Okay.
So it opened, yes, it opened at midnight today.
Okay.
Because the system is based on the on a midnight time period, so.
Gotcha.
All day Thursday through all day next Wednesday.
And where do we send them if we are going to put this information out? What is the website or the address that you direct them to?
It is on our website. I can give you the I can send you the exact link.
Oh yeah, if you could send me the link, that would be great. And that way I can, I'm happy to forward that to, you know, anybody like the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, there's a lot of nonprofits that, you know, do work in the city here that I'm sure if they haven't applied or maybe if they're new and they don't know that they can.
Mm-hmm. And we talked with, I believe, who was it? Tila from WA, one of our revitalization coordinators. She's a half-time revite coordinator, half-time homeless coordinator. She was talking to a group in Avondale called, and it slips my mind, but it basically, it, they work with rehousing homeless youth. And they're a fairly new organization. They have branched out from Avondale and they started talking to Scottsdale, I believe, and I think she may have said Gilbert, but they, that's a relationship that they're interested in establishing with additional cities. So homeless youth together is a really good connection. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But certainly I'm happy to, tomorrow morning when I'm back in the office, I can email the exact link.
That'd be great, thank you.
So the only food was
Meals on Wheels.
Senior meals?
Congregate and
Meals on Wheels.
All delivered.
Not St. Vincent de Paul or
they did submit, but they didn't submit for that.
They didn't submit. And the
food bank down here on 59th.
Didn't.
So that was something we were surprised
about.
That's
shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking.
So I mean that was one that I mean, granted I understand the you know, this group and then the council affirmed youth, disabled, those are the high priorities. But when I saw that there was no food proposal or there was none that was comprehensive that covered the entire population, that kind of struck me.
I may reach out to the coordinator at the food bank and just ask, you know, hey, what's up?
What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we think that leaving this open for another week and just really blasting it out there again is a way. I'm really not sure. I mean, we ended up with 20 fewer applications than we normally get. So
it's a big drop.
Yes,
which is a big drop. Huge. And you know, getting people to the orientation that was a little less well attended than we were expecting. But we used our usual channels to get the word out and a lot of the organizations are ones we work with on a regular basis, and so we really weren't quite sure. So we're hoping this next week will fill that up again.
We'll see what we can do.
So I will definitely send that out, or I'll ask Monica to send that link out to all of you.
Great, thank you. Wow.
Any other questions, comments? And then the last one here is the consolidated plan, 2021 annual action plan update.
Yes, a lot has happened in just the last week or so with the consolidated plan. I know that it was a little bit delayed with staff turnover and whatnot, but we do have a consultant now. We contract with a consultant.
Oh, yeah.
Name is Karen Dash Consulting. They're out of Wilmington, North Carolina. and I've been on a number of calls with them. I'm just brainstorming, you know, what exactly we need to do next. And so we've come up with a timeline of things to come. The survey, that has been out now approximately 24 hours. I distributed a number of surveys last night at Glendale University, which coincidentally was Community Services night to present. And we had 26 respondents. So that's nice. We did those by paper, so we'll manually input those. Spoke with the assistant to the mayor, Kirsten Morgan, and she's been gracious enough to help us distribute. So now, advertisement of the survey is on the city's main front page under the public notices, and also Mr. Paradise's public housing wait list is also advertised under there. So that is the city's main front page website, so hopefully that will garner more traffic. We will also run an ad in the Glendale Star describing or telling when the two public hearings will be. So we have one scheduled for the 14th at 6:30 in this room, and another one will be scheduled concurrent with the CDAC meeting on November 21st. So I'm talking to Monica about the logistics of this. I don't break open meetings law. We need to advertise the public hearing on the CDAC agenda, which we could do, and we can also advertise it separately as a public hearing. So for whatever reason, if there is not a quorum next on the 21st, we can still hold that public hearing. And it's unusual that we would have so few members not be able to attend, so that at least, if not a quorum, but a good number of you could weigh in on that comment. And so we figured, since we already had you here, it would be a good idea to, you know, to kill two birds with one stone. So we will be talking about the consolidated plan. The consultant has said that they would like to get information, data from us beginning of December, so they can start doing their analysis. I did provide them with a lot of the HUD data, community housing assessment, and other data sources that HUD provides for their analysis. I provided them with our general plan, our housing survey from 2016. They do a lot of that background research using our existing plans, and so they're absorbing and digesting that right now. I plan on keeping the survey open on SurveyMonkey probably through November. We have discretion as to how long we want to keep it open, and certainly, you know, the longer the better. We certainly want more responses, and that was something I impressed upon the attendees last night at Glendale University. You know, please, this is really important. If you think about it financially, if we get about $3 million a year, so to or give or take, you know, that's about $15 million over the consolidated planning period. And considering the economic multiplier of that money being spent in the community, that's close to $100 million of economic impact in the city in the next 5 years. It's a big deal. And so, really want to stress to people, please fill out the survey, please come to the public hearings, please let us know, you know, what it is you think we need here in Glendale for our low-income folks.
Excuse me. And is that on the Glendale website as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right.
Yes.
Here.
Oh, yes. Okay. Are you filling it out right
I
now?
I am.
I want to see if I can find a link and distribute that too. You'll send that out.
It's right on the front page, and it's under the housing thing. The survey monkey.
There is a link.
Right. It just opens up. And
in the interest of getting the process going, we did the blast that we could. So we did send an email blast again to our partners. We do want our partners. You know, they have their unique perspective about our needs. I'm on the count. Monday we have our management team meeting in the morning, and I've asked to be on the agenda because I want to see what the other division managers can do to make the surveys available to their clients as well, particularly libraries, because it's just the sheer volume of foot traffic that they have, to see how we can actually get people to access those surveys whether it's digitally or paper format or whatever's easiest for them.
When does it close? When are you wanting to close?
I haven't decided. I think we can keep it open as long as we need to, but really no later than December 1st or so.
It'd be great to have like some computers at the health fair.
The health fair, okay.
There's like a gazillion people there.
Okay.
And have a table set up for whatever, and I have an idea.
Thank you. I'm trying to think. We want as many. It would be nice if we could get 1,000. It's having gone through this process a number of times in the last 18 years. It's not always a very well attended.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually not a lot of involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been fairly typical, and you see that in other places as well. But really, in the interest of making sure that people have an opportunity to get as much public input as possible, really trying to push this out. So 1,000 would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, where else are we? We're tentatively on the consultant had wanted to approach or provide the committee with preliminary results in January. Probably not the best time because of the reviews. We keep you poor folks here for four meetings that month, which we really appreciate. So probably in February they will come, or they'll probably participate by Skype, and then in March they will present their findings to the council based on your input. And then we will have a draft plan at the end of March, comment period through April, and then council approval in early May. So that's not 100% timeline, but that's what we're looking at right now.
I assume they're also pushing the survey out on social media?
Yes. That's one of those ideas that I had not had a chance to put into effect. I had to make some changes to the survey at the last minute, last night before going to Glendale University. And so Monica and I sat down today and we sort of spelled it all out with the times and when we had to submit things when. And tomorrow that's our plan, is to contact the city's PIOs and do those other things. And then Monday we can get the other division managers on board with other particular means of getting the survey out, then we can add to it. So, 1,000. I think good thoughts. Any questions about town plan?
Is it in English and Spanish, or?
It is not in Spanish yet.
Okay.
But it will be.
Okay.
So.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. The next meeting is November 21st at 6:30 p.m. in the same location. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Do you want to second it?
I second the motion to adjourn.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It's been motioned and seconded that we adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And thank you for leaving last week. I listened to the recording. You did a very nice job.
Thank you.
I was in Montana. My mom had passed away.
Oh,
so sorry. So yeah, it wasn't like I planned to be gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Bye, Marcia.
I had to.
You still there, Marcia?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Vice chair, so you don't have to worry
about it. Absolutely,
kind of bail
anytime.
I thought, well, at least
have a good night.
Lisa, she'll have her first chance.
Right.
We can make an arrangement later.
Because I have certain, I looked at my plan.
Yeah.
I took the initial training in
2009.
It's been over 10 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before that, I did.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Take care, everyone.
Bye, Marcia.
Have a good night.
Bye. She's the one that reads books, right?
Do some reading
here. Sitting over there. Yeah.
Marcia was right here, I think, last time. Wasn't she?
Yeah.
Probably should turn off that.
A little too much.
I didn't turn this off.
No.
We might want to have conversations.
Now that we have
adjourned the meeting.
What? Now that we know that Marcia went to the restroom.
That was a little TMI. That was kind of.